Barger.
Thank you, Beth. Coming here from the Engine Pro Studios just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. The Michigan Motorsports Hall of Fame induction banquet takes place on Sunday up in Mount Pleasant. One of the gentlemen being inducted is a big part of my growing up in the sprint car community in Michigan, and as a whole, a much bigger part of the Michigan racing community. Through the 80s and 90s, there was a group of announcers that were really special, and they did a really good job what they did. And another one of those announcers is being inducted into the Hall of Fame on Sunday when Mark Cowan will take the stage. Mark from St. John's was a two-night-a-week announcer in my childhood at I-96 Speedway and Crystal Motor Speedway at the time, now Crystal, then Crystal Raceway, but now Crystal Motor Speedway. And he also seemed to pop up everywhere. And it seems like a lot of my youth was spent listening to Mark call all kinds of races, including hours and hours of races at the Dealer's Choice. It's really special, though, the camaraderie that the group of announcers like Mark and Leo Pago and that group had in that era, and a really special era in Michigan short track racing. You think about there was racing 3-4 nights a week around here, and some really heavy hitting drivers in all the divisions. And it was something really neat, and traveling around watching sprint cars, because it wasn't really, other than Butler, a weekly home for sprint car racing around here at that time. You got to see all these drivers and hear these announcers, and Mark was one of the best ones. He was one of the most entertaining. He would be knowledgeable about what was going on the racetrack and in the pit area. And he'd also do it with a touch of humor. For instance, he would, I jokingly tell you, which radio shop would be the best place to take a leak frequently every week, and you would laugh every time. And it was a lot of fun. He made it fun. So I wanted to sit down with Mark, who still goes to the races, still works on race cars. I still see him quite a bit. Had an opportunity to sit down and talk with Mark a bit about his announcing career and various things, and what he thinks about being inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it was a fun to sit down with Mark. We probably could have done 2 hours, but we did. I tried to keep it. He was on the road, so we tried to keep it for about 15, 20 minutes of Mark Cowan, soon to be Michigan Motorsports Hall of Fame inductee. First off, congratulations on getting voted into the Michigan Motorsports Hall of Fame. When did you find out you were actually elected in?
About 4 days after I found out I'd been nominated. Leo Pago happened to come from the meeting where they counted the ballots in Lansing. He was going to go right by my house anyway, so he swung in and told me the news.
Oh, cool. So he got to swing it in person and tell you, not just call you then. So that's really neat.
Yeah, it was kind of neat coming from Leo. We worked together a lot. We've been friends for a long time. And I think initially he was more excited about it than I was. I was still kind of in shock.
And who wrote your bio? Because for people who don't know, you have to have a bio written about you and submitted to the Hall of Fame board to be elected. Who did your bio? Do you know?
I'm really not that sure. I think Trevor Hollis had something to do with it. I haven't found that out for sure yet, but I do remember a couple occasions where he was quizzing me pretty hard and texting me, asking me a bunch of questions. So I'm right now blaming him.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. And it's kind of amazing to think, when I first talked to you about this, you're amazed it even happened. I'm amazed it didn't happen sooner. To me, it's just shocking you weren't elected sooner, but you said you were kind of caught off guard by it.
Yeah, I really was. I never felt I contributed that much compared to the other people that are in the hall, people like Mick Schuler and Gary Lindahl, Leo Pago, evidently somebody else thought I did, but I never really thought I contributed that much. I'm just a pit rat that come up to the tower, you know. Rafe Ricci talked me into announcing for him, and I still to this day, I'd rather hang out in the pits.
It's just what you do, for those that don't know. Mark, you know, a lot of people, when they quit announcing, they kind of go off. They might get a boat, get a camper. You go work on race cars.
Yeah, I always have. It's always been about the cars to me. My dad had a new car dealership when I was growing up, so I've always been around cars, and we had go-karts when I was a little kid. We raced them around town and different places, and my older brothers drag raced brand new cars from the dealership for a few years, so it's always been about loud and fast for me, I guess.
So you're the car guy, you get involved in racing, and when did you discover Crystal Motor Speedway?
A bunch of us from town started racing over to Owosso back when Roger Ward owned it. And at one time, there were 30 street stocks from St. John's racing over to Owosso when we first got going. It was knock the windows out, chain the door shut, you've got a race car, you didn't even need a roll cage. Bring a helmet and go race. We started over there, and I don't know, one night we ventured up to Crystal. They had a double feature for street stocks, and Eric and I went up there, and darn if we didn't win both of them. And wow, this is neat. This dirt's kind of cool. So, and I don't think we ever went back to Owosso after that. That was back late 70s. It was back when Dave and Diana Parker were promoting the Crystal.
Okay, so, but it's at some point, Ray Fricke gets the track. How did he come about asking you to jump in the booth?
Well, that's a long story that started probably 3-4 years previous to me going to work for him. So the Combs had the track back by then at Crystal, and was up there racing with Eric Chant. We had Doc Smalley's Pink Panther cars. I was back in the beginning of the Pink Panther days. We're standing around spilling beer after the races, and the flagman and the pit steward and everybody's hanging around spilling beer with us. And Dan Menicky happened to be standing there, and at the time he's an in-law to the Lacombe family, and he was kind of their go-to gopher guy around the racetrack. I said, "Man, oh man, I wouldn't want your job." I think he was a pit steward then, and the flagman was standing there. I said, "I wouldn't want either one of your jobs. You know, there's always somebody mad at you. There's always somebody mad at the promoter, and the flagman did you wrong, or the pit steward won't let me race or won't let me run this part." And I said, "The only job I'd ever wanted at a racetrack would be the announcer, because if I got a guy's name wrong or pronounced it wrong and they didn't come up correct me, I figure it was their fault. Is that the only job I'd ever want?" And I've been an auctioneer for 42 years, and the old auctioneer I used to work with, "You ought to get into announcing." He announced harness racing. He says, "You know, it's a good side income," or whatever. I remember him saying that. But Dan remembered that statement that night when we were still in beer. Well, fast forward 3-4 years, Fricky now has Crystal, and his announcer wanted out. He's looking for an announcer. Well, Dan Menicky evidently didn't have enough to drink that night, and he remembered that statement, and he brought my name up to Fricky. Ray wouldn't leave me alone until I tried it, and I finally did, and did a few weeks, and yeah, this is kind of fun. And then that's where it started.
And it grew, because at one point, I swear, about every racetrack I went to, you were working at one point, when you were at like the peak. I know you were doing I-96 on Friday, you do Crystal on Saturday, it almost seems like you were doing other stuff too. It seems like you'd pop up everywhere.
Well, that's back when Owosso switched back to dirt there, when the Simcoes had it, and then Bob Hart had run it for a year or so, and I worked over there then, seems like everybody wanted me to be their fill-in guy when somebody wanted time off. I know Leo Pago, when he needed a night off, he would call me. I'd filled in for the Dick and Betty Crook up at Mount Pleasant a few times. And then Leo would always invite me up to help with the Wood Tick and the Outlaw late model shows. So that's how I ended up at those places.
And you'd go around, and like I said, it seemed like you were everywhere, and it took off. Did it get to be a bit much trying to keep everything straight of where you were going and what you were doing? Because it always seemed like you were pretty on top of like where you're at and what was going on at each track.
Well, it helped between Crystal and I-96 that they shared basically the same batch of cars, so I got to know those guys pretty well. And I helped out on a lot of the Wednesday night MSPA shows, and I knew all the drivers, the late model drivers there. Plus, at the same time, I-96 ran the SODs and other sprint cars quite a bit, so I got to know all those names and cars pretty well. So there for a while, it was pretty easy. I didn't need any cheat sheet. You know, nowadays, my God, that never happened, but that's just how that come about.
Yeah, and it was a, would you ever feel lucky that you got to announce in that era of short track racing around here? Because it seemed like to me at that time, it was really going in a neat direction where you had some heavy hitting drivers that would go and chase money. You'd go to Crystal every Saturday. You'd probably see Patterson and all these guys. It seemed like your era of when you announced is a really special time around here.
Yeah, it really was. You know, growing up in St. John's, you know, Bob Patterson and Doc Smalley always had race cars. Dick Hamilton had super modified. Guys that I knew grew up around, and Chris and I went to school together and graduated high school together. So it was kind of neat watching Chris's career, you know, expand and grow. I mean, he's a very talented driver, and it was really neat. There were a lot of cars, there were a lot of people involved. It didn't cost nearly as much just to even get to the racetrack. The gas prices were a lot better back then. And when I was helping with Doc Smalley's Pink Panther cars, we were racing 3 and 4 nights a week everywhere. You know, if there was a race, we were there.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing with the MSPA shows and everything. It seems like you had the best guys that would travel around everywhere. And quite often when I travel sprint cars and stuff, the late models would be teamed up with them. And you'd go up to Crystal, you'd see the heavy-hitting sprint cars and the heavy-hitting late models there. And those were always kind of fun shows to do. And that's where I got to hear you a lot. And even you probably don't know this, but when I was announcing, the short time I thought I could do it, I tried to borrow little pieces of everybody, and I borrowed from you was the fact that this is still supposed to be fun at this level, and you can't lose sight of that. And I always felt like you always made it fun in the booth, no matter what you were doing. I think that might have been even your best trait.
Well, that's why I was there. I mean, racing is fun for me, and I'd rather be at a racetrack on Saturday night than in the summertime than anything else. And, I was there to have fun, and where else can you go where there's a couple thousand other people there to have fun doing the same thing, you know? And I just always enjoyed it. Enjoyed the cars initially. That's what got me there. Then you get to know all the people involved, and you look forward to seeing them every weekend. You know, they become family. You see the people at the racetrack more often you do your own family, you know? But I was there to have a good time, and I wanted to make sure everybody else was.
How many years did you actually do it? On a regular basis before you stepped away? How many years had you put in behind the mic at that point?
We figured I did 18 dealer's choice races, and that is about the span of my end-to-end racing announcing career, I guess.
Okay.
I think right. I helped Dick do the last one he put on over at I-96, and that was the 25th. And I did the first one, was the last dealer's choice they had at Kalamazoo, and I think that was the 8th annual. And then it moved to Crystal, and from there to Butler, and then that one at I-96. Mm. That was a year or two after Pat passed away.
Was that
the BBs were great people. Yeah. I just love the BBs.
Yeah. Was that maybe the highlight of your announcing career, doing those dealer's choice races, or can you cite something else you would call maybe the highlight of the announcing portion of your racing endeavors?
Well, I would guess the dealer's choice, probably that's where most people from across the state heard me, you know, if they weren't a regular Crystal or I-96. And, oh gosh, they were a lot of fun. Those 4 days in September were like the longest 3 weeks of racing season. You know, when you're doing qualifying on Thursday and Friday, you think, my God, is this ever going to end? And the next thing you know, it's midnight Sunday and everything's done. Except the one year, Leo and I were still calling Street Sack LGH feature races till like 4 in the morning on Monday morning one year. The year it rained on Saturday and they lost the whole Saturday show.
Yeah, those had to be marathons. I couldn't even imagine working a show like that today.
Well, after a few years, it got to be a pretty well-oiled machine. BB's had a good crew pieced together from people from every racetrack in the state, and it was the same crew after a certain amount of time, and we all kind of read each other's mind, you know, and it got to be a pretty well-oiled machine, and it was fun. Everybody was there to have a good time, and my God, one time there was 500-600 race cars on site, and, you know, you don't see that very often, especially in Michigan, and it was just cool to be a real part, really cool to be a part of that, especially when it moved to Crystal. That's when I was announced there. That was my home track, and I was just geeked that Steelers Choice came to Crystal.
And that seemed that seems to be when that event really took off, too. As I mean, it was always big at Kalamazoo, but I mean, when it went to Crystal, it took that next jump for a few years there and was just something of almost a mythical proportion. I'd travel out of state, and people go, what's that race that has 600 cars up in Michigan? And I'd hear about it all over the country.
Crystal was so well-suited for it. It was right dead center in the middle of the state, and there was a lot of room there. I mean, they camped all the way around the racetrack. You know, everything probably around three sides of that racetrack was pit area and camping area and whatnot, and it made it convenient to everybody. And nobody was more than an hour and a half away from the racetrack in Michigan, and so it was really well-suited for it, and it was a great time up there. And it really helped put Crystal on the map, I think, too.
Yeah, it did kind of elevate its notoriety to the next level. I would definitely concur with that. Over your announcing career, can you cite maybe one or two moments that maybe were the most memorable, the most memorable things you can remember that happened at the racetrack when you were behind the microphone?
Oh, there's one or two. One in particular, when Batista's had I-96, they put on a big late model special that was running three segments. There was a race out in out east somewhere that they did that, and Tom Batista wanted to try it, and there was Billy Moyer and a bunch of them come up, and Chris Patterson got on his lid in one of the segments, and he ended up winning one or two of the other segments. They just flipped the car back over and checked the oil and tightened the lug nuts and set him back out again, and he and Moyer put on quite a show that night, and I guess Tom Helfrich ended up, they gave points for every segment, kind of like what NASCAR is doing now, and Tom Helfrich ended up winning the deal, and but that was kind of neat. But as far as memorable moments is, anytime Jack Hewitt come up to I-96 and he won the race, he was probably my favorite victory lane interview, because you'd ask Jack one question, he'd be so amped up you could hand him the microphone and walk away, go to the concession, get a hot dog and a pop, maybe stand in line and go to the bathroom and come back, he'd still be talking. So he was just great. I love that.
I would agree. I completely concur with that.
Those stick out. And any first-time winner or even a second-generation driver, some driver's kid get out there and run good. Those were always pretty neat. But most of the dealer's choices, there were some pretty memorable moments there. But those two things I just mentioned, two that always stuck out.
How's the acceptance speech coming along?
Well, we're still polishing on that. In fact, I just got my paperwork out here while I was sitting here. I was going to piddle with it, and the phone rang. So I'm still working on it. I got a lot of people to thank and a lot of things I want to say. I'm just trying to get them all in the right order now.
Well, we wanted to do this because I wanted to thank you, because you may not know it, but there's a lot of people that do various things now that listen to people like you, like Leo and yourself and Gary Lindahl and all those people through the years when we were in the stands, and now we're the ones writing and announcing and stuff. And we really did take from all of you. It might not show at times, but we did. And it's a very well-deserved honor, and congratulations, and look forward to hearing what you have to say on Sunday.
Well, I hope I can get through it without stuttering too badly, and the statement you made about stealing things from all of us, I've done the same thing. I've been out to Knoxville, Iowa, and I stole things from their announcers, and Go Fairgrounds announcers that went with the big block modifieds down to Speed Weeks in Florida. Those guys, the old gravel-voiced Fairgrounds announcers, I picked up a few things from them, and I guess when you steal things like that, they consider it flattery or whatever, but I always try to pick something up, the good points. They're not folks, they're not people. I always call them race fans when I addressed the crowd. That's why I figured they were there. They were racing fans, so I wanted to address them that way. But it's been a good time. I'm a little bit lost now when I go up to Crystal. The tower's another level higher. That last set of stairway really rips me up getting there. But, it's so nice up there. We thought we were big time when we got windows in the tower years ago, and then Ray Fricke put a little closet with a porta potty up there so we didn't have to run down to the bathrooms. And now Ron's built this big Taj Mahal tower there at Crystal, a carpet on the floor and air conditioning and a real bathroom and everything. It's just, it's pretty neat to see how things have progressed.
It really is. Well, Mark, congratulations on the honor. Look forward to seeing you out at Crystal in the pit area and every now and then when you saunter up to the tower as well.
Well, yeah, stairs get harder to climb, but I try and get up there and visit my buddies, Leo and Trevor up there. Trevor, I kind of set Ron up. I called him up. How'd you like to go back to two announcers? Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Well, I've got this nephew. Trevor's my nephew. I think he'd be pretty good at it. Well, I don't know. Roger might be put out. I said, I've already talked to Roger, and I've already talked to Leo, and they're willing to let him work with him and train him. Well, Ron really couldn't say no. It's like, I kind of set him up, but, Trevor's not let me down. He does a real good job, and Roger's really grown into the position. He's done a very good job. He just completed 20 years at Crystal, and I'm proud of all of them.
Yeah, it's a grind doing it every day or every week in and out, and we appreciated all the work you did, and like I said, congratulations, and like I said, we really look forward to seeing you on Saturday when we head up there when the sprint cars are there.
Okay, yeah, I'll probably be there. It's hard for me to stay away, whether I've got a car to play with or not. Probably be around. I don't think I've missed an opening night at Crystal in close to 30 years. So yeah, I'm sure I'll be around.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Really appreciate Mark taking time out to do that with us. We're going to try to do some more frequent podcasts here throughout the off season like this. Sit down with some people, do some conversations of all different kinds of people. And it's not really going to be on a regular schedule. It's going to be just kind of how we can get people. But I felt Mark was a really good guest with the Hall of Fame induction, and it's one I've wanted to do for a while. I'm glad we were able to get him. So congratulations to all the inductees on Sunday. Look forward to, if I can get up there, to see what everyone has to say. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and the Google Play Store. Also, you can go to tjsideways.com, click on the podcast link, and see past episodes there. Thank you for listening. We'll see you down the road.
Thank you for listening to the TJ Sideways Podcast.